This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
So I make a save, and he didn't try play rebound because I already have a puck, and he try and like hit me, and okay, it's my f***ing crease, like get the f*** out of here, you know? It's in my zone. I don't care, like, guys tell me it's a tough guy. I don't care who's here, like, it's in my zone. Like, if you, like, you know, like, play puck, if it's a rebound, yeah, just play. Don't touch me, like, I'm a goalie.
You mess with Mikhail Burden at your own peril. Good morning, Winnipeg. Good morning, Manitoba. And for all those joining us live this morning at TSN1290.ca and via the iHeartRadio app, we say good morning, universe, and welcome to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, the 19th of December. Hope you're having a good morning. Kicking up your feet, pouring a cup of coffee. We're with you for the next 3 hours. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuka, I'm your host, Drew Mindell, and we welcome you to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. That's how you can reach us here. You can also reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply on our website. It's got all the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio. That's available at illegalcurve.com. Gentlemen, good to see you on this Saturday morning. A busy show ahead for the next 3 hours. Lots of Jets talk, lots of return to play conversation. We now know that there's a tentative agreement between the NHL and the NHLPA. We don't yet know where the Canadian teams are going to be playing, but that should hopefully get its worked out over the next few days and or weeks. Good to see you on this Saturday morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Yeah, we're doing well. And yeah, boys, it was nice of the NHL and the NHLPA to wait till, you know, just before 7 o'clock p.m. Central Time.
Yeah.
That tweet came out from our boy, Frank Saravalli. And then obviously, you know, some of the other insiders like Pierre LeBrun were reporting on it. And, you know, it was nice of them to wait until after Huss and Rick were off the air on the afternoon ride for us to be able to be the first show after that tentative agreement was announced. But obviously I'm joking, but you know, this is something that, you know, we've been waiting for not just days. We've been waiting for this for weeks, right, guys? And then when that news came out earlier in the week that the Canadian teams might actually not be playing in Canada this year, which I don't think that's going to happen. And it's funny to me because, you know, we've been talking about this all-Canadian division for, you know, 2 months now at least, right? And to think that, you know, this all-Canadian division would be playing in the U.S., obviously there wouldn't be an all-Canadian division at that point, and you probably would go back to, you know, the more normal divisions. But, you know, this is just good news. I mean, it hasn't been finalized yet, we know that, but it's just really a formality at this point, so it's good. We know that, you know, the NHL is coming back officially, we think, on January 13th, but, yeah. You know, it's just nice to know, you know, that we're going to have some closure here, because the news wasn't looking too good a couple of weeks ago, you know, when you heard about, you know, the salary, you know, rollback and the escrow and all that. You guys remember, you know, unfortunately we had to talk about that, but, you know, it looks like, you know, they've put that aside. They're going to deal with that at a later date. And now it's just a, you know, a question of what's going to happen with the Canadian teams. But you have to think, guys, that the NHL and the NHLPA are going to work this out with the provincial health authorities, because to me, it makes I realize, guys, you know, there aren't going to be any fans this year, most likely, in Canadian arenas. But to me, it makes absolutely no sense to have Canadian teams playing home games in the U.S.
Well, I mean, if you want to, we can, and we'll talk about it, and we'll talk about it, you know, throughout the course of the show. But to expect that all of a sudden the provincial health authorities of Ontario, Manitoba, and Alberta are going to put up these significant roadblocks when they haven't thus far is not really realistic. I think the provincial health authority in British Columbia is the one that is probably causing the biggest headache for the NHL, and good for that provincial health authority. Let me make that clear. If they're not comfortable with it, mm-hmm. with the plan, then they should say, whoa, you need to beef up, you know, whatever rules and restrictions. But, I mean, so far, since this virus has happened, this has really begun, Manitoba, Alberta, and Ontario have basically rolled over for the NHL and said, whatever you want to do, you can do. So it's hard to believe at this point in time that they're going to put up such immense roadblocks that all of a sudden the Jets can't play here, the Sens and the Leafs can't play in Ontario, and the Alberta teams can't play, Dave. I mean, it's just not realistic to think that, you know, these jurisdictions are going to grow a spine at this point in time.
I think what's also not realistic is that the NHL
you know, trying to leverage this, when you're saying that your return to play plan is January 3rd for training camps, which obviously can go on even if you weren't planning on having the teams stay in the city, because if you don't want them to play, they could obviously train here. I know a lot of, I don't know what the other jurisdictions have done, but in Manitoba, they're allowed to have training camp. I would imagine a lot of the other ones, they are as well. But to me, the NHL, it almost seemed farcical, where they're like, well, if we can't have an all-Canadian division, well, we're going to move seven teams. It's like, you guys can't get your act together, and we're supposed to believe you're going to move seven franchises to where exactly? Like, what cities?
The UFC's what, Fight Island.
Well, yeah, like, what exactly? Are you moving the Jets to Atlanta? Are you going to move, like, a team to UND? Like, it's so farcical, this idea that somehow in a few weeks you're going to move the Canadian teams. But, you know, just I want to get onto something that Ezzy was talking about, because to me, this almost had a lockout feel. Because, you know, I remember when we were, you know, back in the 2012-13 season, every day it was kind of like that waiting. So finally you have the agreement. And I think, you know, back then it was on January 6th that the lockout was officially over. And then they came back, and I think they started playing on the 16th or the 17th of January games once again for that season. But look, it's a big moment for the NHL. I think it's, you know, it's important. And I think it's also, to your point, Drew, it's important for health authorities if you don't feel comfortable. And think about back to the return to play in August. Mm-hmm. British Columbia was the one province that originally Vancouver was going to be the hub city.
Yeah, and they said no.
Yeah, it was her name was Dr. Bonnie Henry.
Right.
And I remember back then we were doing the Zoom cast because we weren't on air, right? And
right.
We were talking about that. And you're right, Dave. I mean, and you know, that was obviously not only the reason why, you know, the hub wasn't Vancouver, but, you know, one of the reasons why I think BC, you know, has been considered, you know, one of the best provinces in terms of their public health practices, right? So I'm with Drew. I mean, I think this is what you want to see. Mm-hmm. And I think regardless of what Canadian NHL city you're talking about, you have to have concerns about, like, for example, you know, if, you know, Toronto, Montreal, Ottawa, they're coming to play in Winnipeg. I mean, they're not quarantining. If they're flying in on a Wednesday for a game on Thursday, like, you know, there has to be, you know, protocols in place, whether that's rapid testing, whatever. So, I mean, you want these protocols to be, if you're a regular citizen, forget a hockey fan, because obviously hockey fans are not going to be watching these games, you know, in Winnipeg or Edmonton or whatever you're talking about, right?
In person, you mean?
Exactly. In person, they're not going to be watching the game. So you, as a general citizen, you want to be sure that, you know, when, because it's not just, you know, 26 players or 27 players, it's team staff, it's much, much higher than that, right?
And you got to think about all of the people that are impacted, right?
Right.
So you've got bus drivers who drive these guys to the arenas, you've got the hotel staff that have to clean their rooms, there's the hotel staff that have to wait on them, there's ramifications for people coming into the community in a large size. It's not like they come in a vacuum. And, you know, they stay in a bubble and it's just going right to the rink and that's it. There's still implications on people coming in. Now, you're still allowed to move about, you know, so there's going to be a circumvention of the process because, you know, if you fly into Winnipeg, generally you're supposed to quarantine.
Well, not from Western Canada. Well,
but
right
I'm talking
now.
About, but we're not, if we were only talking about the Western Canadian teams, it wouldn't be the same thing.
Sure.
But we're talking about teams from Eastern Canada.
And there's a good chance, guys, that come mid-January when the NHL season starts, Manitoba's still going to be in a code red. I mean, you could have, you know, Ontario still in a code red.
Yeah.
Like, there were over 2,000 cases in Ontario this week,
the
right?
Cases,
like,
aren't going down right now. But, so, yes, I mean, you know, you're absolutely right, Ezzy. This isn't getting better right now, and there's no sign of it getting better imminently. So it is incumbent on the public health authorities to do what they think is necessary, mm-hmm. and do what they think is best for the safety of all citizens,
right.
Not strictly hockey players or the organizations. But, you know, in BC is the wild card here, which is where I think the NHL is running into the trouble, is that they're not, it seems that they're not afraid to push back against the NHL, whereas there's no evidence of that happening in a lot of the other
right.
jurisdictions.
Yeah, and what that's going to result in, hopefully, is that these protocols are going to be even more stringent, and they're
right.
going to result in, you know, less NHL players, less team staff, you know, getting the virus, or as Dave said, other people that are associated, you know, mm-hmm. whether that's, you know, the bus driver or, you know, the hotel staff. I mean, the teams are going to have to stay in a hotel, right?
Right.
And you can, you know, create that bubble-like atmosphere as best you can, but it's not going to be like, you know, the bubble in Edmonton in August. It's not going to be, you know, a vacuum-sealed bubble.
The players said they won't sign up for it, and I don't necessarily blame them, because it was one thing to do it for, you know, for a couple months or a few weeks, depending on how quickly you were eliminated, versus the entirety of a 50 56-game season.
Right.
And we'll talk more about the return to play and some of the particulars, not necessarily Jets-related, but, you know, the taxi squads and things of that nature throughout the course of the next, you know, the 2 hours and 50 or so minutes. But there was Winnipeg Jets news in terms of a transaction this week. And that is, you know, those have been few and far between as of late. Mm-hmm. So it was nice to see the news come out that Mikael Burden, we played him off the top, certainly an interesting character with a fiery personality. He signs a 2-year contract extension with the Jets organization. It kicks in after this year. So he's still under his existing contract. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-year deal starting after this season. The first year pays him $250,000 in the AHL, $750,000 in the NHL, and then the second year is a one-way deal worth $750,000 in the NHL. So the question for you guys, do you believe that Mikael Burden is going to be the backup goaltender for the Winnipeg Jets next season?
You're talking about 21-22.
21-22. Obviously,
right.
It's still Laurent Brossoit.
Right.
Then they got Burden under contract for the next 2 years.
Just wanted to be clear that we're not talking about this season.
Not
because
this year.
Laurent Brossoit's got that job. But
he doesn't.
I'll let Dave get in here as well, because Dave, you know, knows more about Mikael Burden than me and probably everybody aside from Rick St. Croix and Wade Flaherty. But, I mean, Dave will tell you that, you know, Burden is a larger-than-life personality. He's a really popular guy on the Moose. We've got Pascal coming up. You know, in about 50 minutes or so, 45 minutes or so, and we can talk to him about Mikael. But, you know, obviously, you know, he is a guy that if you look at his trajectory, you know, he's played full-time in the American Hockey League. You know, he's on his way back from Russia, I believe, Dave, or he's going to be, you know, back in Winnipeg soon. And you look at it, and he's a very interesting prospect because, you know, you expect Mikael Burden and Eric Comrie to kind of share the duties for the Moose this upcoming season, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's opportunity for both of those guys, even though, you know, Mikael Burden's a little bit younger than Eric Comrie at this point. But there's that chance that Mikael Burden, you know, can take that backup role. And obviously, you know, we're looking, you know, over a year in the future here, Drew, but, you know, absolutely, I think he is a guy that you have to look at and you have to say, well, if the Jets don't bring Laurent Brossoit back for that season, and then you do have the expansion draft, so, I mean, the Jets are going to have some decisions to make. I mean, Brossoit always could be the one that is exposed.
So let me stop you right there. So as it pertains to the expansion draft, you're only allowed to protect one goaltender.
Yeah, right.
And that one goaltender is obviously going to be Connor Hellebuck. That being said, all the other goaltenders that you expose, and you can expose, you know, in this case, you'd be exposing Comrie, Burden, Brossoit. One of those goalies has to reach a certain number of parameters to be quote unquote eligible to be exposed.
Right.
Burden is that goalie for the Winnipeg Jets. So I've had a lot of comments coming into my Twitter feed saying, oh, why are they exposing Burden and not Comrie, or why are they exposing Comrie and not Burden? They're exposing both of them. You can only protect one goaltender that's on your roster.
Right.
Again, that is Connor Hellebuck. Burden will be available to be taken by the Kraken. Comrie will be available to be taken by the Kraken. Brossoit will be available to be taken by the Kraken. Of course, Brossoit is going to be a UFA.
He
wouldn't be under contract. But, you know, I'm just saying that all the Jets goalies that are in the organization besides Connor Hellebuck, or, you know, never mind the other guys who are draft picks or whatnot, are going to be eligible to be taken by the Kraken.
Right, that's right. And, you know, so this doesn't have anything to do with the expansion draft.
It does, because Brossoit meets the parameters necessary
to Burden.
Pardon me. Burden meets the parameters of having, you got to play 40 games played or 70 over the past two seasons. You have to be under contract, you know, for a certain
But what
length
I'm saying
time.
Is you, with the Jets, you know for sure who you're protecting.
Yes.
So what I'm saying is certain teams, like Ottawa, for example, you know, you hear that they might not protect Matt Murray. That might not be, everyone thinks, you know, they signed Matt Murray, that's for sure. But Joey Decord is a guy that they really like, and Matt Murray's under contract, right? And you've got Hogberg there as well. So all I'm saying, Drew, is that it's not like the Jets are signing him and they're not sure which goalie they're protecting. That's
no,
all I'm
they're
saying.
They're protecting Connor Hellebuck.
But yes,
no
this absolutely means that Mikael Burden now is eligible for the Seattle expansion draft.
Yes.
You're right. And, you know, I'll let Dave get in here. I'm talking too much here. You're talking as well too much, Drew.
Okay, Dave, your thoughts on Burden. You know him. You watch him more than anybody basically in the city of Winnipeg.
I think, look, I spoke to Pascal Vincent about it in April. He liked his development. I thought it was interesting the way, you know, some coaches would clamp down on his extracurriculars. And that doesn't mean that Burden gets away with murder. You know, he's got to follow, you know, a regiment, but he's not trying to put him in the same box as every other goaltender and follow that same path. Like they recognize this guy's got abilities that other goalies generally don't have. His stick handling, while occasionally will get him in trouble, I mean, he literally will be like a defenseman behind the net and he'll deke out guys. Like it's, and I've posted videos and stuff.
And the Jets haven't had very many goalies like that in their organization, you know, just to...
Wow. Yeah. Every time there. Connor Hellebuck handles right. the puck, people hold their breath.
It's funny. I actually thought he got better this year, but a lot of people said he didn't. A lot of people thought he was bad. I actually thought Hellebuck was better. But no, I mean, he's good in that regard. I think, you know, would he be necessarily the backup? I mean, you got to think there's Arvid Holm, who the Jets signed to their, his three-year ELC, who's playing over in Sweden.
Playing well in Sweden too. Really playing, impressive numbers.
Yeah, and he just went back to back with wins. I think gave up three goals in two games.
But Dave, I mean, Burton has a huge leg up on Arvid Holm just because he's been with the Moose now for a couple of years.
Yeah,
right?
No.
So Arvid Holm is not going to be, I don't think, someone who could be a backup for the Jets as early as 21-22.
Well, I mean, you gotta think he's playing in the men's league. It's not like he's playing junior, right? So he's playing against men. I would think that they'd want to bring Holm over, and to your point, as to have him play with the Moose. But I'm just saying I could see him fighting for an opportunity just because he's doing well over in Sweden. Again, it's harder because we don't see these guys as much. So I mean, I look at the numbers, I can watch some of the highlights, but I can't really watch him that much play, you know, live like I would with Burton. And I think Mikael Burton's, you know, he had a really interesting year in the KHL. He was the most prolific, starter for SKA, St. Petersburg. Over the course from September to, I want to say, November. And then he just kind of fell out of favor. And it's one of those, like, fluke goals that was scored from behind the blue line. And he got pulled after the first period of that game. And that was in November, mid-November, I think November 13th. And then after that, Scott played about 13 games. In those 13 games, Burton played once. He played, including a game where he played the full game, played 5 minutes of overtime. His coach pulled him for the shootout. They ended up losing the shootout, and he's backed up one other time. So it was kind of weird, unusual the way he kind of fell out of favor. And
his rights got traded, did they not?
Well, but I was going to say, but the other thing is, just to point out how unusual things were in Russia, Yaroslav Askarov, the Preds, hot prospect goaltender who they selected at the virtual draft 2020. He too was on this team and he too wasn't getting a lot of starts. So I don't know exactly what they have four goaltenders in their system. And yeah, Drew, at the end, it was 3 months to the day that he had gotten traded from Sochi to SKA. SKA traded him back, his rights back to Sochi. So it's believed that, and it wasn't confirmed, which I thought was unusual in the release from SKA, that Burton wasn't returning to North America for training camp. That's what we're assuming. We just haven't seen anything to that effect from any of the media outlets out in Russia.
Well, it's clearly a chaotic goaltending scene in Russia. For the Jets, though, they do have the comfort in knowing that Burton is going to be under contract, certainly this year, and then for two more years after that. Where his trajectory continues to go, only time will tell. When we come back, we're going to ask the question, should the Jets follow a method employed by the Tampa Bay Lightning, which is 7 defensemen, 11 forwards? Something the Jets have certainly been reluctant to use, have rarely used it. The Lightning do it more often. Should the Jets consider that model? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
I'm feeling really good, and like I just need to show that I belong here and then play my own game and like just can't change anything and like just play home game and be good in the D zone.
Winnipeg Jets defenseman Sammy Niku, that was back from the return to play, talking about getting ready to get on the ice and get excited for that.
200 years ago.
It seems about that length of time. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show, Saturday morning. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Dr. Les Rikus and the team at Linden Market Dental Center, official dentist of Illegal Curve Hockey. Don't be an Ezzy. Always wear a mouth guard and give yourself peace of mind protection, as well as facial, teeth, and mouth protection. To make an appointment to get your teeth to ting, visit LindenMarketDentalCenter.com. You know, so I was reading this article, and it was a good piece by Kristen Shilton. She covers the Leafs for TSN.ca. And it talks about the Tampa Bay Lightning's use of 7 defensemen and 11 forwards. you know, which is different than the typical 12-6 that we more often see. And she was talking it from the perspective of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Is that something that they might be interested in doing? And I thought it was sort of applicable for the Winnipeg Jets. And I thought it was applicable for the Jets for a couple of reasons. One, you look at the Jets defense, and whatever you think about the Jets defense, whether it's good enough as currently constructed, you tend to have a glut of what you hope are NHL defensemen. And I'm including in that list Ville Heinola, Dylan Samberg, Sammy Niku. You add in Derek Forbort, and then you go, of course, Puhlman, Dylan DeMello, Morrissey, Pionk. You got seven guys there. And then you think about the Jets' use of their forwards and how Jets head coach Paul Maurice is, at best, reticent to use a fourth line on a regular basis. You know, that the Jets' fourth line really tends to get more than 5 minutes of ice time historically, only in cases of blowouts. You know, usually they're closer to 5-6 minutes on if it's a close game. There's no trust. There hasn't been much trust between Maurice and whomever he's throwing out there on the fourth line. So the question I had, would the 11 forward, 7 defenseman option be a realistic one for the Winnipeg Jets, given the defensemen that they have on their roster and given the historical usage of the Jets' fourth line, Ezzy?
Yeah, I think you make a really good point there about the fourth line, and I think it's not just how Paul Maurice uses that fourth line. You look at what types of teams can use the 11-7, right? And, you know, you mentioned the Tampa Bay Lightning. They used it quite a bit in the playoffs, but in that final, they actually, I forget if it was the last 2 games, 3 games, 4 games, they did go back to 12-6. Remember, because Zach Bogosian came out of the lineup when they were doing 11-7, right. And then they came back and Bogo went back in the lineup, and then they went with the traditional 12-6. But, you know, in turn, just to give some perspective for those who haven't read the article, it was a really good article by Kristen Shilton, one of those, you know, thought-provoking articles. And she does mention that, you know, going back to 2011-12, when John Cooper was the coach of Syracuse, mm-hmm. he used 11-7. So this is going back, you know, 9 years here that John Cooper...
This isn't an aberration. No, he's been consistently using this.
And coaches before him have used 11-7. It's not like this is, you know, something that's just in the last 10 years, but you don't see it a lot in the NHL. You see a few teams use it, and definitely you don't see teams use it throughout the entire year. But I think why, you know, this is an interesting idea, Drew, that you bring up for the Jets is because not only do they not necessarily have that fourth line, you know, like the Cizikas Clutterbuck Martin line is the line I always use, or one of those established fourth lines. It's because they have so many talented forwards and you want to get them more ice time. Like, that's the key there, right? And like you mentioned, you know, with a couple of defensemen like Ville Heinola, Dylan Samberg coming up, I mean, most likely at least one of those players is going to be, you know, you think maybe in the top six and maybe part of that taxi squad. But what you have to think about is you're not only trying to get some of, you know, those forwards. Like, I look at a guy like Jansen Harkins, right? Like, you know, we don't know if he's going to be on the third line or the fourth line, but you want to get him a little bit more ice time. So then you can move maybe a guy like Paul Stastny or maybe it's Mark Scheifele. It doesn't necessarily have to be center.
But what your point is, Ezzy,
you're cycling one of your top six, top nine guys onto the fourth line. Like, you think, like, who was it on Tampa? It was, Cedric Paquette. You had Patrick Maroon, Carter Verhaeghe was another guy. I think he signed with Vancouver, if I'm not mistaken. He signed with another team. Mm-hmm. I forget. It might have been Vancouver, but
I thought it was Florida.
It might have been Florida.
Yeah, it was.
But Verhaeghe was a guy that was kind of cycling in on that fourth line, right? So the idea is you maybe get a little bit more ice time for some of your forwards because you're playing them with a better, more talented one of your top six or top nine forwards. And I think that works for the Jets. And you know, it could allow someone like, you know, Ville Heinola or, as you mentioned before, Drew, a Sammy Niku to now get in the lineup.
Sammy Niku is the one that sort of primarily came to my mind, Dave, because we know that Niku prefers to play on the right side. And you look at the Jets' right side, and it's, you know, relatively established at this point in time. Mm-hmm. Most people would say that the depth chart for the right side is, you know, Pionk, DeMello, and Puhlman.
Yep. Right.
So where does Niku factor in there? And so I thought, you know, that, you know, this might be an opportunity to get Niku some ice time, get into the game, you know, without there being necessarily an injury that removes somebody else from the lineup.
Yeah.
You know, you look at, I there's a lot about this that, I mean, there's still to be determined, certainly, but if Samberg and Heinola maybe exceed expectations when they come to training camp, and if they prove to be NHL ready, and we don't know whether or not they will or won't, but for argument's sake, let's say they do, all of a sudden you get Niku there as well, you can run those seven defensemen, and that fourth line where you would say, you know, it's certainly unclear. I mean, I don't think, with all due respect, I don't think Nate Thompson playing consistently for the Jets excites anybody.
Yeah, I agree.
And so, you know, if he's – now, I'm not saying he's necessarily the one to come out of the lineup, the forward that doesn't get the ice time, but this could be an option to, again, get more ice time for your best forwards where you're double-shifting them. You know, there's a lot about this that I liked. I mean, still to be determined, but in principle or in theory, there was a lot that I liked about it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the NHL tends to be a copycat league, so if something works and you win the Stanley Cup, then maybe teams start to take a look at it, a harder look at it than they would have before.
If it works, and in this case, if you have the personnel for it.
Well, and to your point, I mean, look, Drew, there's no doubt of in my mind that you've got talented defensemen who could be sitting up in a press box or whatever they're going to be doing in this instance.
Sure.
For this coming season, but That to me is my biggest fear with, you know, developing players is the, you know, the waste of their development and having them sit around and watching them, you know, really watching games. Cause I think, like, you know, to me, a developing player develops by playing in games and learning from that. And, you know, in my conversation with prospects, whether it was David Gustafsson, who was talking about how important it was to play games in Sweden because he hadn't played since March with the Moose, and he thought, well, I don't want to wait, you know, potentially another 4 or 5 months, so at least I'll get some games. So you know these guys, they don't want to be sitting. They want to be playing games. When I talked to Jonathan Kovacevic, his thing was, like, it was palpable when I was talking to him about how much he missed playing and how much it meant to him to play in hockey games. So my point is that guys in that, you know, category, those young prospects, the worst thing you can do to them, in my opinion, it's just my opinion, is to have them sitting and wasting away. So a guy like Sammy Niku, who really just, Sammy Niku has nothing left to prove at the AHL level.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying he can't work on his defensive game, but my point is him sitting in the press box is a complete waste of time. And so, and if you don't see him as a viable, you know, member of the team, he's not a good asset either because he's not accruing anything.
Yeah, he hasn't shown anything
no
to
interest.
Other teams.
So my point is that this method, again, different from what traditional, but it may be afford an opportunity to get more guys in the game.
I agree with you 100%, Dave. And you know, I wanted to mention, Kristen Shilton mentions this in the article. John Cooper actually only used the 7-11 system.
Mm-hmm.
Makes me want to go get a taquito.
I'm surprised you haven't already.
John Cooper only used it 12 times in, you know, roughly 70 games.
Yeah.
And then he used it in 14 of 25 playoff games. So he didn't use it much in the regular season, but he used it in about half of the playoff games. Just, you know, Interesting to note. So it's not something that, you know, you expect Paul Maurice to use a lot during the regular season, or maybe not even, you know, in the playoffs if the Jets make the playoffs, but especially if there are injuries, and Kristen points out to that Ryan McDonagh injury, you lose one of your top four defensemen, you know, that's an opportunity to bring in, you know, maybe another depth defenseman and, you know, then go with the 7-11 system. So mm-hmm. just something to, you know, maybe look forward to coming up with the Jets season here starting in mid-January, that, you know, if the Jets do run into some injuries, either on the back end or maybe with a bottom six forward, you know, maybe Paul Maurice does decide to try it out.
When we come back, Murat Ateş of the Athletic is going to join us. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.
Bottom of hour number one. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. Our Illegal Curve question of the day. We want to hear from you on this question. As a Jets fan, what is the number one gift the Winnipeg Jets organization could place under your tree this holiday season? For example, a Patrick Laine contract extension, a top four left side defenseman, whatever you think would be your number one gift, tweet it at us at Illegal Curve. You can also text it to us, text 129090, and we will read your responses throughout the course of the program.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
From The Athletic, we're pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Murat Ateş. Murat, good morning, and thanks so much for joining us. How are you, buddy?
Good morning. I'm doing well. It's an exciting time to be talking to you, I got to say.
We are excited to talk to you. It's nice that, you know, we have at least, you know, a light at the end of the tunnel as it pertains to the absence of hockey, with the return to play being announced yesterday, the tentative return to play, pending approval, of course. But, you know, January 13th might be here before we know it, less than a month away. And, I, for one, am certainly excited for that, as I imagine you are too, Murat.
Yeah, absolutely. Likewise. I mean, it looks like certainly there's a couple of things to work out. It's not officially approved. I think that's coming Sunday or Monday. But it looks like January 13th is real from where we sit here today, going straight into the season. No preseason games, just a 10-day camp for the Jets starting on January 3rd. And it means that, you know, all of those questions that we've had for such a long offseason, will Cole Perfetti have a spot? Well, hey, there's a possibility of an expanded roster. So, you know, there may be a way to keep him in the NHL without burning his contract. What about Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg? Can they claim roster spots above some of the veterans? Well, that roster size helps them as well. Can Paul Stastny play on the second line? That Patrick Laine contract you just asked about in terms of a holiday presence, well, there you are. I mean, I think a center like Stastny is right there for him. So how good can their chemistry be? I mean, soon. We're weeks away. We're absolutely weeks away, and it's so exciting to see that we'll get those answers.
Let's assume, Murat, that the NHL Canadian division ends up coming to fruition. I still expect that that will be the case, but, you know, obviously time will tell. So let's assume that happens, and they've announced that the playoff, you know, format is basically top four teams in each division. If you're one of the top four teams, you're going to be playing some extra games for Lord Stanley's Cup. In your mind, as we sit here today on the 19th of December, are the Winnipeg Jets a top four Canadian division team?
They're in the fight for it, in my mind. I have them in the 3-6 range, and I've been asked, you know, to put this on record in some of my articles before, and I've kept them kind of in that sixth spot, thinking that the team is improved. Absolutely it is. Full season of Dylan DeMello means a lot to me. I really like the way he plays and the way he and Josh Morrissey were able to settle things down. And of course, Paul Stastny, I know there's some questions about his production falling off in Vegas last year, but by a scoring chance perspective, he was just as dominant as ever. And I believe on Winnipeg's second line, he should have a big impact. So I think the team is a step ahead in a couple of different ways this year than last. I also think Connor Hellebuck was a perfect goaltender last season. And if he drops from perfect to very good, Winnipeg's going to lose some goal differential right there as well. So I think that they're a good, improved team in the mix to fight for those playoffs, and absolutely will be in that fight. And I can't sit here and say for sure that I see them in that top four without any questions.
Right, we have to talk about your most recent article for The Athletic, the video room, which I'm calling, you know, Winnipeg's version of Inside the Actors Studio. You know, you did an excellent job breaking down why Neil Pionk was so effective on the Jets power play. I really, you know, enjoyed it. And for those who haven't read it yet, I recommend that we'll tweet it out from the Illegal Curve account. But you basically went through all of the points that Neil Pionk had on the power play. And I think a lot of people knew that Pionk was very successful on the power play, but I don't think many people knew that he was fifth in the NHL when it came to, you know, points per minute at 5-on-4. And, you know, the line that I really liked is towards the end in your conclusion in the article, when, you know, you talk about, you know, you're not prepared yet to say that, you know, Pionk is part of the NHL's elite. And, you know, the question I had for you over the course of writing your article, you know, are you still confident in Neil Pionk kind of playing that, you know, point role on the Jets power play? Do you see, you know, him playing a similar role to last year? What did you maybe learn about Neil Pionk specifically on the power play maybe that you didn't know before writing the article?
Yeah, I love that question because it's such an interesting concept. I mean, we all knew he had an impressive season last year. He put up a lot of power play points. We all saw that. Tremendous debut season for the Winnipeg Jets, and I think everybody was happy with that. But then you start pouring through it in terms of just how effective was he. And at 5-on-4, like you say, power play points per minute at 5-on-4, you have Connor McDavid, Leon Draisaitl, David Pastrnak, Mika Zibanejad, and Neil Pionk. So where does that come from? How does that happen? And that was the reason for this article, because I am confident that should Winnipeg go back to its existing system, Neil Pionk is the best option that they have at the point. I mean, he's a right-handed shot. He's good. One of the things we definitely learned was he's good at getting his wrister through. He can feather it through traffic. He can put it in for tips for Scheifele or Kyle Connor in front of the net. So he's very effective there. He's a patient passer. He doesn't really cave to pressure. He's not the sort of a guy that, PK forwards can pressure into a turnover at the line. So there's another real strength of his. And he demonstrated that many, many times on those 25 power play points from last year. And then on the flip side of that, you still wonder. I mean, he doesn't have a cannon like we're used to seeing from Dustin Byfuglien. He doesn't fire lasers across to Patrick Laine. And sometimes by eye, you think that Patrick Laine would score more if that pass was quicker. At the same time, you can't argue with the end-of-the-day results. He was fifth in the NHL in points per minute last year and ninth the year before in New York. There's some reasons to think that, yes, he's the fifth most dynamic offensive player on that unit, and yes, he depends on his teammates, but that this isn't a fluke. So we do this one more time, and I think that we're going to have to start rethinking how we feel about Neil Pionka on the power play. And if you let me add one more thing to it, there is an argument that a subscriber made at The Athletic on the piece that, hey, maybe we overrate bombs. Maybe we overrate the cannon from the point if Neil Pionk's able to be so productive. And I think that there may be something to that, getting the shots through for sure. I mean, it's so rare that players beat goaltenders cleanly without screens, traffic, or deflections these days. But one other side of that, because this whole article is here's something good, here's something bad, here's something good, and in the end, Neil Pionk ends up with elite production. The flip side of that is, even if Dustin Byfuglien didn't score a ton with his cannon from the top, you know that he stretched PKs because they were afraid of that shot, and they were trying to get out on him very, very early, so seams would open up. So there's so many factors to look at. The end, just to answer your question point blank, yes, I think he's a good option.
Murat Attash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290.
No, Murat, one of the other articles you just wrote recently was about Cole Perfetti and how he channeled anger and disappointment into having a breakout year that was from when he got cut from Team Canada last year. And I thought, to me, what was so interesting was that rather than becoming consumed with the being cut, he harnessed those emotions into something positive. And, you know, we hear so much. We've heard from Craig Button talk about how smart this kid is. And to me, I really do wonder what you think is the odds that he's going to really be able to turn a positive World Junior experience into a real shot, not necessarily just sitting on the taxi squad and practicing, but a real shot with the Winnipeg Jets this season.
Well, I think he's in one of the best positions that a prospect of his age will ever be, fresh from the draft, because he's had so many months to train, work on things like his strength and his speed. And I was talking to his dad the other day, and the family joke is that he's lost all his baby fat at this point over the last several months. And the fact that he'll have the opportunity to play at an elite level with the World Junior team heading into camp, I think all of that bodes well. Now, does he claim a full-time roster spot? I don't think so, simply because Winnipeg's forward core is so deep. I think it would be a difficult ask for any player to break into a lineup that's already loaded from top to bottom as it is, even with the addition of Paul Stastny. I think that freezes out another spot as well. So will he absolutely unequivocally make the team? It would take something incredible, but could he be part of that taxi squad? Could he get worked in? I think the real advantage of that taxi squad is you can get Cole Perfetti into whether 9 games is the cutoff or they prorate it to something smaller, but I think you can work Cole Perfetti in with your NHL guys and get him a few games and not burn his ELC for a really long time unless he absolutely demands it, and he'll get the experience from that. It'll be tremendous heading into next season.
Murat is our guest. Murat Attash is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290 Saturday morning, 9:44 in the morning, to be perfectly exact. Murat, you know, everybody is clamoring to see Patrick Laine with an expanded opportunity. You know, top line minutes. It's really been a topic of conversation for months now. Do you believe that this is the season that we finally see that on a consistent basis, or is Paul Maurice going to go with his trusted and true Shifley, Connor, Wheeler line?
Well, I think that trusted and true line, you know, where this is, it always goes back to psychology for me for this one. This is what I sincerely think. I think that the best and most dominant team that Paul Maurice ever coached was the 2017-18 Winnipeg Jets. And on that team, that combination of Scheifele and Wheeler was incredibly dominant by any metric you want to find, by your eyes, by the number of goals they scored, by the tiny amount of goals they gave. Everything was great. And I think that you go back to that well. I think absolutely when you feel like you have all of your ducks in a row, you go back to that well. So I think that that's a likely combination again for large stretches of this season at the very least. And I don't think that will cost Patrick Laine a thing, because if he gets Paul Stastny as a center, it'll still be the best center he's played with since Paul Stastny in 2017-2018, just at the tail end there. And I think that based on his age, based on where typical players tend to peak, starting kind of that 23 age offensively, Patrick Laine is just 22. It's a little mind-blowing. He's still so young. Based on the steps he's taken in the past seasons, I think there are so many different reasons to think this is going to be one of, if not the best offensive season that he has in his career to date. There's lots of reasons to think he's on his way up.
Murat Ateş is with The Athletic. He's a good friend of this program. Murat, glad that you're feeling better, first and foremost.
Absolutely.
You know, having recovered from, I'm
going
to say, your latest concussion. You got to keep your head out of it, buddy.
Yeah, absolutely. I got to say thank you on that. I'd like to say 90% recovered, so that if I typo or if I say anything you disagree with, just blame the concussion and we're good.
I can do that. Happy holidays to you and yours. We'll hopefully see you sometime in January. You know, hockey, allegedly, maybe, fingers crossed, just around the corner.
Beautiful. Thanks so much, guys.
Take care, Murat. When we come back, we're going to be discussing... What are we going to be discussing? Let me open up my show plan here. We're going to be discussing who should the 4-6 players be on the Jets taxi squad, if any. And we'll explain the if any part after this. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
We had an incredibly challenging season in terms of adversity. And there were lots of pieces of our year where Blake Wheeler's at center. I mean, just go through your lineup cards. I've never had a season that my lineup cards look so different on a nightly basis.
From the return to play, that's Paul Maurice talking about the roster churn that the Winnipeg Jets experienced this year. Welcome
churn,
back.
Baby, churn.
Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. This segment brought to you by Frank and Mauro Zappia of Zappia Group Realty, official realtors of Illegal Curve Hockey. When 95% of your clients come via referral, it shows your commitment to honesty, integrity, and a total dedication to client satisfaction. For all your real estate needs, come shake hands with Frank and Mauro Zappia online at zappiagroup.com. So we know that the return to play, if approved, and fingers crossed, of course, it's unlikely that it not be approved at this point in time, is going to include a taxi squad. Mm-hmm. And so basically what the taxi squad is, it's an expansion of the 23-man roster that every NHL team currently has a maximum of. Mm-hmm. So these... And it's unclear so far as to how big the taxi squad is going to be, mm-hmm. but these are basically four other players, maybe six other players, somewhere in that range, who are going to travel with the team, skate with the team, practice with the team. They're going to be paid their AHL salaries, but they're going to be alongside the NHL players. They're going to get NHL per diem, things of that nature. For the Winnipeg Jets, mm-hmm. the big question when you saw that is, who is going to be on that taxi squad?
Right.
And Dave, you had an interesting point where you think that the Winnipeg Jets, really for all intents and purposes, do not need that taxi squad for the most part.
No, I mean, as soon as, look, the AHL, and obviously this a lot is contingent on what's happening with the AHL. But,
sure.
But our belief is that, from what I've been reading, is that the AHL is going to have a four-team Canadian division with the Moose as kind of the lone Western representative, and then the three teams in the East. And so you've got four Canadian cities that will have their NHL teams, their AHL teams, within a reasonable range. And that's obviously for Winnipeg. And Toronto, that's in the exact same city.
Right. So in for Ottawa, it's Belleville, which is just down the road.
And Montreal, it's Laval, which is also very close.
Just a suburb of Montreal.
So you've got easy access to your players. So to me, and again, I'm a proponent of prospects who most likely would fill these taxi squads mm-hmm. being with your AHL teams playing games. So to me, again, and this was before we knew what the pay structure was going to be. So you know, but again, to me, your thought process is, who am I developing? And if you're developing your prospects, then a guy like David Gustafson, if he's not playing on your third or fourth line, needs to be playing in the AHL with the Manitoba Moose, not practicing with the Jets, not watching from a press box. Christian Vesalainen, the same. Ville Heinola, the same. Dylan Sandberg, the same. And the truth is, with those guys, it's not as if you can't call them up if you want to put them into a game situation.
Sure.
Because the reality is, they're waiver exempt, so they can be called up without an issue. And obviously, look, the Jets have been a team that haven't really always carried 23 anyways.
Right.
So it's not as if the Jets are likely to carry to the max and wouldn't have room to call a young guy up if you want to put him into the roster. I'm simply suggesting, or being a proponent of, that if you have the Manitoba Moose available, and we're talking to Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent next segment, so I'm sure he would agree with me, because he's going to want these young guys playing in it with his system, learning and developing rather than watching.
The thing that I don't get, Dave, is like how does the NHL determine, you know, Judd Hirsch, Tony Danza, like Christopher Lloyd, like who gets them on their taxi squad?
That's it. We're done. Just Sean, wow. Sean back at the studio. That's it. First of all, Taxi was off the air, I think, long before
well,
you were born.
Reruns were around when Eddie was banging in the early days of River Heights.
You know, I had to get that in there. I mean, Taxi was a great television program, and I just had to get that in there. But, you know,
you call me old. I mean, I've never dropped a taxi reference before.
A taxi reference is
well, I could have gone with Taxi Driver and you know, mentioned Harvey Keitel and Robert De Niro, Drew, but... you know, when we're talking about the taxi squad, I think that, you know, first off, this is a new concept. Mm-hmm. It's not something that we've seen before. And I think, you know, going back to what Dave said about, you know, with the Jets and the Moose sharing the same building, the same city, I mean, we know that, you know, it wouldn't make sense for guys like, you know, CJC, Skylar McKenzie, Jonathan Kovacevic, like, it wouldn't make sense for those guys to be on the taxi squad because you know that those are going to be top players for the Moose. So it makes sense for a guy like Dominic Toninato, maybe, for to be, right? So, like, it's going to be very interesting to see how teams use this taxi squad, right? Because not every NHL team has their AHL team, you know, just down the hall.
This is, to Dave's point, I think this is a competitive advantage.
Absolutely, yep.
For the Jets, for the Leafs, for the Senators, and the Canadians, and you know the San Jose Sharks, because the San Jose AHL team. Well, who
knows?
They're
going to be the Vegas Sharks.
Well, who knows where San Jose
Arizona
is going to
play? Yeah, I think they're playing in Arizona, aren't they?
They're starting their training camp is probably going to be in Scottsdale.
Yeah. So I mean, it's like you know, I was just going to quickly say here, Dave, that you know, like. It's something that I, you know, maybe we can ask Pascal about it, but I'm sure there's mixed emotions because AHL teams, AHL coaches, managers, they don't necessarily want players, you know, just being part of a taxi squad where guys aren't playing games. But on the other hand, you know, we know that there are teams in the East Coast Hockey League who have said that they're ceasing operations for this year. So that could open up jobs, right?
Oh,
because if you have, you know, some players that would otherwise be playing in the American Hockey League on a taxi squad, that opens up other spots for guys that were on ECHL teams that don't have a job right now. So it's one of those situations where it's going to hopefully lead to, you know, more employment for some of those players that don't have teams.
If you're the Oilers, the Canucks, and the Flames,
that was the one I was going to make.
I mean, you have a couple factors. One, you have your AHL teams in the United States.
Yep.
Two, anytime you're calling up a guy, there's either going to have to be an exception in place or some sort of rules in place, you know, with regard to COVID testing that player
I would think
available.
I would think that your presumption is that these guys will be in the taxi squad.
Yeah.
And that to me is why those teams are at a disadvantage because unless you're mixing them in, then the reality is that those young guys, if depending on how you make up construct your taxi squad, those young guys are sitting around.
It's still to be determined, but according to, I think I saw a tweet from Frank Saravelli about this last night, that there will be almost a maximum amount of time a player can be on the taxi squad without getting into some sort of game action. Which I'm not really sure how that is going to work. I don't know if that means you have to sort of churn constantly through your taxi squad back to your AHL team. But it's not an ideal situation for any player, especially a younger player, who's trying to break through to be sitting and skating. You know, the Black Aces in the playoffs, that's almost where the comparable is to the Black Aces.
Right.
That's for a short window of time after a lengthy hockey season with the reward being potentially the Stanley Cup.
Right.
So the Black Aces are definitely okay with that at that point in time.
Yeah. No, that's the big risk here is that you know, especially if you have 4 to 6 guys on a taxi squad, there's a good chance that, you know, 2, 3, 4 of those guys are going to go long periods of time without playing in game action. That's the big issue with this.
Sure.
So, I mean, it's something that, you know, in the Jets organization's case, this is going to be a competitive advantage where maybe they don't even have to use the taxi squad. Maybe they're only going to have 1 or 2 players when they go on the road. It's something, you know, it'll be very interesting to see team by team how many players they have on that squad.
I would assume, and again, this is you know, as it pertains to the salary cap, you can't run a roster, say, with 21 guys on it and then have your taxi squad, because your taxi squad, again, is not going to apply to your salary cap.
Yeah.
So I would assume you'd have to max out the number of NHL roster spots
before you can assign somebody to the... It's not like you're going to have 21
and
then have your 4 to 6 guys.
Right.
You'd have to have a 23-man roster.
Right.
And, I mean, again, that's the logical conclusion. I'm saying it rather emphatically. I don't actually know that.
You would assume that would be the case.
But that, you can't logically think that a team would be allowed to have 21 and then have 4 to 6 guys on.
No, you have to max out your roster.
I mean, then again, if a guy is on a one-way deal, it wouldn't make a difference anyways because he's making his NHL salary.
Fair enough. Except for you can bury 1.15 or 1.175 million in the minors on an NHL salary.
I still can't believe you guys didn't appreciate that Tony Danza reference. Like, we're talking about, you know, Tony Danza. Who's the boss? Tony Maselli. Like, come on.
Understood the reference. We knew who he was.
Anytime I have the opportunity to bring up Tony Danza on this show, I'm going to do it.
Okay, well, in that case, that was probably going to be your first and last time to be able to do that. But, you know, I was surprised you didn't go with Andy Kaufman, though. That was where my surprise was.
Yeah, Andy Kaufman was on Taxi, too.
Yeah, I mean, he was sort of that was his breakout. So I thought you might go with Andy Kaufman more than Tony Danza, but we can deal with that.
But Tony Danza guy, Drew.
Okay, we can deal with that at a later date and time. When we come back, maybe we'll ask Pascal Vincent if he's an Andy Kaufman guy or a Tony Danza guy. But the head coach of the Manitoba Moose joins us next, Pascal Vincent. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN 1290.
Hour number 2 of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN Radio 1290. Alongside Ezra Ginsberg, alongside Dave Minuke, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve. You can reach us here via text message. Send your text to 129090. And, of course, our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets news and audio is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We are pleased to welcome back to the program the head coach of the Manitoba Moose, a good friend of our program, Pascal Vincent, joins us on the line. Pascal, good morning. Happy holidays to you and yours. How are you?
Good morning, guys. I'm doing really well. Thank you.
That's great, Pascal. Appreciate you giving us your time this morning. Obviously, we have to start with the announcement from last night that the NHL has their return-to-play plan tentatively agreed to. Hopefully, that'll become an official agreement soon. Obviously, that has ramifications for you as the Manitoba Moose head coach. What were your initial thoughts, and sort of did you get that bug of excitement a little bit when you found out the NHL is going to return, which hopefully means the AHL is going to return shortly thereafter?
Well, we certainly hope so. It was certainly a good news, and that's to me, it's a step moving forward, knowing that there's an agreement between the players and the league. It's that's a step forward, and we were looking for that day, and hopefully they would come to an agreement. So they did, and now there's obviously more steps to be taken in order to play our first game, but it was a good news, and you know, small good news are great news to us. It means that if the NHL, like you said, if the NHL looks like they're going to be starting, it looks better for us in the American League for sure.
So Pascal, right before we had you on, we were talking about this idea of the taxi squad, which I'm sure you've seen at this point. It's been reported, you know, that NHL teams, as part of this tentative agreement, are going to be allowed to have, you know, 4 to 6 players on it. And obviously we're not going to ask you, you know, how many players the Jets might have or who those players would be, but just what were kind of your first reactions, about this? Because this is obviously, you know, something new. We haven't seen this in previous years in terms of, you know, how it could impact your hockey club.
Yeah, it would. But again, it's our mission here with the Moose, and I'm talking only from the Moose perspective. It's to help the Winnipeg Jets win the Stanley Cup. Our goal is to support and produce and develop our players. Now, what does it mean as far as the taxi squad? I'm not sure. We're not sure of the rules exactly, how many players and who's going to get the call. And there's difference. I spoke to quite a few people about this and what kind of a player you send up in the taxi squad. If we are playing it with the Moose, are we keeping our young guys and play them, or we send them up and be ready if needed to play in the NHL, but maybe not play as many games if we start, again, considering and thinking that the AHL is going to play. So there's different kind of approaches that we're looking at, but we need the rules to be in place first, and the number of games and understanding if even in the American League, if we're going to start playing at some point, how many games and where against two, and all those questions that we don't have any answers yet.
You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Our guest is Manitoba Moose head coach Pascal Vincent.
You know, Coach, I was talking to Johnny Kovacevic about 10 days ago, and one of the things he was talking about was how much feedback he gets from Mike Keane and Jimmy Roy and on the player development side. Because obviously these guys, especially the guys, not the ones who are in Europe, but the ones in North America, you know, they're not playing games. They're practicing. They're having to stay self-motivated. That's their connection to the team. So what have you heard from the player development guys, really from the mentality on your players? Because like I said, I've only talked to CJ Cease and Johnny Kovacevic in North America, and they've spoke about how it's hard for them to stay motivated, but yet they have because they know how important it is. And you and I talked about that in April, about you'll see, you know, come around this time what it'll be like. But what kind of feedback are you getting from Jimmy Roy and Mike Keane on the mentality of your prospects?
Well, they're excited. They're excited to even think about the fact that we might be starting to play again. But there's a lot of, like I was saying, there's so many questions that we don't have any answers yet as far as when. But at least there's a light at the end of the tunnel, so it creates an excitement. Mike and Jimmy are doing an amazing job staying in touch with those guys and making sure they stay sharp. And from our side, from the management side, I think it's going to give us a real good read on who's a good pro and who's not. The guys that really took advantage of that time off, that we didn't want to take the time off, but we had to, we were forced to. We'll have a good indication once we resume playing and skating again who took really advantage of that those difficult moments and turned this time into a positive development time. So it's the guys are excited, obviously, because now we're thinking about, okay, now it's possible with the vaccine and the good results we hear from the governments and the medical side of the whole thing. So it's there's some hope, and that's becoming exciting. We're creature of habits where we have deadlines. We have a game. Our life is around games, and then we know when in the normal season we play Tuesday, Friday, and Sunday, for example. So we're going to prepare our week according to the schedule that we have. But we've been out of our elements for a while now, and it's to know that we're going to get back to somewhat something that we're familiar with. It's exciting. We were talking about that recently with the coaching staff. We're doing a bunch of projects and studying the game and going really digging and deep on different stuff. Same thing for the players. And it's great and it's awesome. And we do stuff that we normally don't do. But the main word, our DNA is playing games and being, facing competition and playing to win and, you know, playing hockey games. So it's the same for the players. They I'm sure they enjoy, and the feedback is they work hard and they practice and they try to stay in the best shape they can be physically and mentally, but in their DNA, they want to compete. Now they want to go against another team and compete and then play for a win. So it's there's hope. Right now there's hope, and they're excited about that. So that's what I'm hearing from Mike and Jimmy. And we keep stats, and we ask them to get to do some different kind of trainings as far as testing themselves where they're at physically. So we have a few numbers. So there's some long answer to your question, but I guess the word is hope and excitement. That's how they feel right now.
Hope and excitement are good things to have. Pascal Vincent, head coach of the Manitoba Moose, is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. You're listening to TSN Radio 1290. Pascal, you have a number of your players that typically would be with the Moose at this time of year playing overseas in Europe and playing well overseas in Europe, I might add. How much attention are you paying to the performances of your players overseas? And are you able to do any video work watching how they're playing? Or is it more just sort of following along in the box scores and maybe chatting with them and seeing how their performance is on a sort of a macro level as opposed to a minute micro level?
Yeah, no, we do have a video feed from those guys, and we have access to video. And because of the way the game is played over in Europe, it's different. The systems are different for some. The ice is different. The size of the ice is different. So we're not necessarily paying attention. I am not. I'm going to speak for myself. I'm not looking at numbers. I'm looking, when I look at those videos, I'm looking at their feet. I'm looking at their hands. I'm looking at their decisions with and without the puck. But the most important to me right now is I'm looking at their feet and if they're moving their feet. And I see good things. I see, because all systems are different, and to have a true evaluation of a player, you need to know what kind of system the coach is running, see if they're adjusting to the system. But above and beyond that, in any system, if you're not moving your feet, you're not going to be successful. And it's somehow an indicator on the physical condition the player is in, if he can keep moving his feet for a full game, the intensity level. So the one-on-one battles. I mean, in playing over there in Europe, maybe you have a little bit more time, but when there's a real one-on-one battle. So we look at those components more than anything else, and the numbers and the stats. But we have access to video and on our guys, and we look at how they play, but not necessarily the same way I would do as a coach with the Moose. I look at them more like a scout, and looking at more individual skills than a coach would do when he's coaching his team.
Pascal, we have to ask you about the Birdman. Mikael Burden just signed his 2-year contract extension with the Jets, and you know Mikael very well, as does the rest of the coaching staff. And I remember one of the quotes that sticks out to me, I forget exactly, I believe it was this past year, but you compared Mikael Burden, Dave would know this better than me, but you can compared Mikael Burden's passion for hockey with Marc-Andre Fleury, who of course you coached with Cape Breton in the queue. And can you just, for our listeners, I mean, because you know him so much better than anybody else, can you just talk about his passion and how you've seen him grow as a professional? Because I think people forget that, you know, he's still very young at, 21, 22 years old.
Yeah. Well, the passion I was referring to was, because there's different kinds of passion, and Marc-Andre is an elite goaltender, most likely going to be in the Hall of Fame. So I need to be careful in understanding the what did I mean when I compared those two. And I remember Marc-Andre at the end of the practices, he would take one-timers, he would take many shots, but his as much as Marc-Andre is a nice, nice man away from the rink and when he's not on the ice, as soon as he puts his gear on, he becomes he has a real aggressive mindset. And that's kind of a passion to play for the game and to make those big stops and to be the guy is what I see in Birdie. Quite a bit. He wants to be the guy when the game is on the line. He wants to make that big stops. He wants to, and he does it in practices. He'll take extra shots. He'll work hard in practices. He's a different goalie in so many ways. He doesn't necessarily always rely on techniques. He'll move to a more a read and react kind of play. His hockey sense is quite good for a goalie, young tender, and we all know that, or the people that haven't seen him play, is play with the puck. And it's, we don't talk about goalies and play with the puck very often, but we have to in Birdie's case, and the reason is because he has a real impact on how we break the puck out when there's a dump in against. So he's really good in that fashion, and he works hard at it. And then, so the passion level can be different, and it's not necessarily the same, but there's some similarities that I see with Fleury in some aspects of the games and the way he practices. This kid is a different goalie, and he has a different mindset. But to me, one of the most important is how did you deal with pressure? And that's something we can develop with our players and teaching them that side of the game within the game, the mental game. But he's pretty advanced for such a young person. He wants to be that guy, and he wants to it's almost like he's looking for those pressure situations where the game is on the line or there's expectations on him. And it seems like so far he's been performing well when he's in that kind of situation where for some others it might be too difficult to deal with that kind of pressure. It seems like he strives when the pressure is on the line. So it's they're all good things. We're excited to have him back. Obviously, the Jets signed him. So it's he's a good asset for us. He's a good he's interesting to work with. He's got an opinion, and I like that. But he's a guy that can help us win hockey games. That's for sure.
You know, Coach, you're talking about mentality and players having the right one. And you know, one player who I think, you know, similar to almost like what the way Jansen Harkins was, who never lamented his station, just worked hard, was David Gustafson. Yeah. And I spoke to him about 2 weeks ago. And, you know, one of the quotes he said to me when I was asking about, you know, when he got assigned to the Moose was, when I heard I was going down to the Moose, I wasn't sad about it. I knew this was going to be a good thing for me. I would really have an opportunity to train on those things that I need to do to become an NHL player. And that's, you know, that's a maturity that we generally don't see on a young player. So, how exciting for you, and we don't know what David Gustafson's role will be, whether he'll be with the Jets or with you at the Moose, but how exciting is it to have, as a coach, to work with a player who understands that it's an opportunity to be with the Moose, to develop his game, to be in the NHL, as opposed to, obviously, the alternative?
Well, they all want to make it to the NHL right away, and why wouldn't they? Like, why wouldn't they think I need to spend some time in the American League? So they all have the mindset of I'm going to go from my team wherever I am, North America or in Europe, and they want to make it to the NHL right away. And then that's their mindset, and it should be that way. The problem happens when the player, there is a detour in their plan, and the detour for most of them is the American League. Well, and because we don't know, and people don't know over there in Europe, and I'd say here to some degree in North America, how good the American League is. So for a guy like Gustafson, who started the season with the Jets at such a young age, and being as effective or reliable as he was, because like I was saying earlier, evaluating the player on the stats is one thing, but evaluating a player on how he is able to execute the system and be effective about it and being a positive player. And for him to start the season with the Jets, don't look at the numbers, but for him to be there and to be able to compete at that level was quite something. And one of the reasons it was because of his maturity level. And we all grow differently at a different pace, and then it's human. We're all different. So I wasn't surprised. For Gus, he's I had the chance to work with him now for a little while, but I met him before. I had a chance to communicate and talk with him, and I had a few conversations with the guy, and you can tell right away you're talking to a man. He's a mature person. He has a plan, and he's got some patience in his mentality. He knows what needs to be improved. He knows what needs to be done, and he's willing to do it. And Gus is a real mature person, and he understood without any hesitations that, okay, going back to the Moose will give me first more ice time. Then that's going to, it's a cycle. It's going to give me more confidence with the puck. I'm going to understand even more the systems because we play the same systems. So he saw the real positive out of it, which that's why we exist. And then that's the one of the main reasons we exist, to have those guys, the Kyle Connors and the Jack Rossovic and all of them, Gustafson, to come down in the Moose and just work at their craft within the system and knowing that, okay, once we push them back up, they're gonna be there to stay. So, and by the end of the season, we could see a guy that is still reliable defensively, had a good stick, strong on the puck, reading the game, being in good positions, but also making plays with the puck and creating that confidence. And that confidence, it takes time, but he was making plays, attacking the blue line off the rush, attacking the net, from the corner, going to the net, using his shot because he has a real good shot, a little bit more, releasing that puck a little quicker. So that's confidence. And for him to understand even before he got there, I wasn't surprised because of his maturity level, and he understands that that's something he needs to do. He needs to improve, and the American League is the perfect place for him to grow as a player, to eventually go back with the Jets and be an even more impactful player with the Jets.
Well, Coach, last question for you, and it's going to be the hardest one. The Moose team worked very hard on their holiday video. How many takes did it take for you to make your to shoot your scene?
Well, you know what? Just one. So I'm really thinking after my hockey career, I'm going to move to L.A. and hire an agent and become an actor. No, seriously, it's always fun. Those marketing people and our production people, they're doing an amazing job. They give us the scripts in advance, and we get to understand a little bit more, and it's all fun, right? We do it for to have a little bit of fun and then to be to do something good for the community. So it's always great. I'm not necessarily comfortable with some of the things that we need to do, because I'm not, obviously not an actor, but I'm really comfortable with the fact that we do it for the fun of it and to do something good for the community. So it took only one shot, though. One shot, and that was done. My line was pretty easy. I didn't have many lines, so it was pretty cool.
Pascal Vincent is the head coach of the Manitoba Moose. Pascal, thanks so much for joining us this morning. All the best to you and yours this holiday season, and hopefully we'll be able to see you, even if it's only via Zoom, but we'll be able to see you and the Manitoba Moose in action sooner rather than later.
Always my pleasure, guys. Thank you very much.
Take care, Pascal. When we come back, we look at the remaining unrestricted free agents. Should the Jets have interest in any of them? We'll talk about that next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturdays are for the Curve on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
The podcast
on TSN1290.ca.
Sam, you talked about the opportunity to play with Finns again. What is the special relationship you guys seem to share all across the league?
Yeah, of course. It was nice to come here and got to spend some time with Turbo and Aho. So it's been really nice. I played with Timo and Saku when I first got in the league, and I haven't played anybody since.
That's unrestricted free agent defenseman Sammy Vatanen, and that was from earlier this summer after he joined the Carolina Hurricanes at a trade deadline deal from the New Jersey Devils. Played about 7 games for the Hurricanes in the playoffs, currently an unrestricted free agent. Welcome back to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Saturday morning, we're live here on TSN Radio 1290. Spend the next few minutes talking about the still-to-be-signed players, the current UFAs, to see if the Jets should have any interest. I know the salary cap, and they're right up against it, if the Jets should have any interest in bringing in any of these guys. This segment of the show brought to you by our friends at Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for over 30 years. The restaurant side might be closed, but they're still available for takeout. They'll still do all the groceries. The deli side is open, so Bernstein's Deli still operating, not 100% like normal, but pretty close to that, so that you can be sure to stock yourself full of Illegal Curve sandwiches. Whatever you need, curbside pickup, call them, look on their website, all the information there. Bernstein's Deli is there to help you out still in the midst of this code red COVID situation that we're in.
Yeah, Drew, you mentioned stock. I actually did check. You actually can fit an Illegal Curve sandwich in a stocking.
Oh, okay.
So it makes for a nice stocking stuffer, and then you'll get stuffed after you eat it.
That's good. That was well done. Good research on your part ahead of that.
Oh, no, I love doing that type of sandwich research.
Yeah, you're very good at the sandwich-related research. It's true. It's been really your forte for many years now. You know, looking at this list of UFAs still, and, you know, we finally saw a player sign for almost the first time, and it seems like forever.
Like 45 days or something?
Something like that. Crazy amount of time since a UFA signed with a new team. Anthony Duclair signing with the Florida Panthers earlier this week for 1 year and $1.7 million.
Can we just stop right there? Like, this is a guy who scored 20 goals twice, and he also has a 19-goal season. Like, and, you know, I remember when we were talking about this, we did the Price is Right match game.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And we were talking about Duclair, and we thought, you know, he'd sign a 1 or 2 year deal.
This was many months ago.
About a month ago, month and a half ago, maybe longer. You know, going back to, you know, right after free agency in maybe mid October it was. And Dave and I were around, I think we were around 2.5, and Dave said maybe as high as like 3.5 or 4 million. Like, that's a really good signing for Florida.
Well, that's the point, is obviously right now, any UFAs who are signing, it's bargain basement price shopping at this point in time.
Yeah, it is.
So for the Jets, who admittedly are up against the salary cap, but they'll get a little bit of freedom once Brian Little's contract goes on to, you know, LTIR, and then, of course, once Jack Roslovic signs, but we don't know when that's going to be, and it shouldn't be for too much money. So should the Jets have any interest in any of these UFAs?
Yeah.
And the reason, I mean, the audio I played off the start there is, of course, of Sammy Vatanen, who can play the left side of your defense, you know, injury prone, admittedly, you know, not the biggest guy, not physical, but he makes a good first pass and he can still skate, and he's, you know, helpful for the Hurricanes when he was in their lineup in their return to play.
Yeah, and if you remember, when he was acquired from the Devils, he didn't play in the regular season.
He was still injured.
Because he was injured, right? But, yeah, let's address, you know, the remaining UFAs that are out there. I mean, we talked about bargain basement shopping, right? But you're bargain basement shopping for really good players. Like, Mike Hoffman and Mikael Granlund are the two best players out there. And I would throw in Eric Halla in there as well. Eric Halla has not signed. None of these players make sense for the Jets. Like, the Jets are stacked on the wings. So, I mean, Mikael Granlund has played center, but he's usually a winger. Mike Hoffman is obviously a left winger.
Right.
So, Granlund and Hoffman are not options for the Jets. I don't think, even if, you know, Brian Little's deal is on LTIR and the Jets have some extra cap space, to me, that's not what they need. I mean, so Sammy Vatanen, you make a good point. That is one guy that I think you could see making a little bit of sense because he fits in with the Jets system. He's a guy that's mobile. He can move the puck. I just don't see it working out, guys, for the simple fact that I don't see a fit for him, especially when, you know, young players like Ville Heinola and Dylan Sandberg could be in the Jets' top six. Like, we don't know if it's going to be one of those guys. I mean, some people think Dylan Sandberg has the advantage because he's older on Ville Heinola, but Ville Heinola surprised us all, right, guys?
And he's played NHL
games, and he's been very good in Finland, as you know, Dave, right? Mm-hmm. So Ville Heinola might spend, you know, the rest of the year in Finland. We don't know. But he's certainly going to be here for training camp, and he could always crack the Jets' lineup. So I don't know if bringing in, you're going to have a glut of defensemen already.
Yeah.
So if you bring in Sammy Vatanen, I don't know, like,
the message you're sending to the other guys might be.
And Derek Forbort, we know, is he's going to factor into the top six either as a second pair guy or maybe a third pairing guy. But you wonder if, you know, there's just maybe too many defensemen, especially considering, you know, Nathan Beaulieu and Lucas Sabiza were signed. So maybe the Jets do move out one of those defensemen and acquire a defenseman like, you know, Sammy Vatanen. I just don't know if it's a fit at this point, considering that I think the Jets do want to see what they have in Heinola and Sandberg and determine, obviously based on training camp, if one of those guys is going to play a full-time role for them this year.
Yeah, I just don't see the Jets having the room right now. I mean, aside from the obvious cap limitations they have, I think that you really do have this opportunity, as you just touched on, to have one of these young guys assume a spot. And, you know, look, in theory right now, you don't even need that because we know that Palmeiras tends to go to veterans anyways. So with Forbort and Beaulieu and Pullman and Pionk and Morrissey and DeMello, you've got your six in theory. Now, a lot of people are are suggesting that Heinola or Sandberg could be that second pairing left side guy that right. you would need. And obviously you have Niku as well ahead of, to me at least, guys like Lucas Sabiza. But the reality is, I think you've already got enough defensive question marks that, you know, bringing in another option. I mean, look, at the end of the day, if it doesn't cost you a lot, that's something you have to factor in as well. To your point, Drew, about there's opportunities for, there's probably no better year for opportunities
right.
than this one. But again, from a Jets perspective, to Ezzy's point, if you want to see what you have in one of these guys, you have to give them the opportunity. And without the AHL starting till sometime in February, mm-hmm. you kind of want to give them the opportunity early. So I just don't know that there's a fit there.
One guy I wanted to throw out that doesn't get talked about a lot, Drew, is Andreas Athanasiou. Like, he's still a UFA. He's out there. Like,
yeah.
this is a guy that...
X of Detroit. He went yeah. to Edmonton at the trade deadline.
Like if I'm, you know, a team like the Nashville Predators, for mm-hmm. example, right? Like, Mike Hoffman's been linked to the Predators, so maybe they go that route. But Athanasiou is a guy that, like, you have to think he's going to be signed.
He's got speed to kill. I mean,
yeah,
that's,
he's a good player. He can give you, you know, 20 goals, 25 goals. I mean, that's in a regular 82-game season. But, you know, this is a guy that's got a lot of skill. So, you know, that's one guy I just wanted to mention that, not for the Jets, but I imagine Athanasiou, I imagine Hoffman and Granlund and Holla, these guys, they're going to get signed in the next couple of weeks. You got to think.
When we come back, we were asking you what your number one gift the Jets organization could place under your tree. We'll read your answers. We'll give you our answers as well. We want to hear from you. That's our Illegal Curve question of the day. As a Jets fan, what is the number one gift the organization could place under your tree? At Illegal Curve on Twitter, text us 129090. Standard messaging rates do apply. We'll read some of your answers and we'll give you our answers when we come back. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We are live on TSN Radio 1290.
This is the Illegal Curve Hockey Show,
the podcast
on TSN 1290.ca.